You are listening to Level Up Your Gaming Podcast, Episode 77, Player Communication and Character Development. Today we talk about communication and character development. The third member of our crew joins us today to discuss his thoughts on communicating in character development. We discuss what important things to consider when developing a cohesive group in Session Zero. If you'd like to participate in the discussion or leave us feedback, you can contact us at levelupyourgamingpodcast@gmail.com or find us on Facebook at facebook.com/levelupyourgaming. If you like the content and want to hear more of the show, subscribe and we'll ensure you don't miss an episode. New episodes come out almost every Wednesday. Also, please review, tell a friend about the podcast, or share with your gaming group. Now sit back and enjoy the episode. Welcome to the Level Up Your Gaming Podcast. My name is Aaron, and joining me in person is Jared. You're wondering why there's no snappy retort for him. That's because we're joined with the person with the mostest, our third member of our crew, Brian. How are you doing today, Brian?
I'm doing all right. Pleasure to be here.
Thanks for joining the podcast. It's the first time we've had you on. How are you doing, Jared?
Just laughing at Brian's pleasure to be here.
I'm sorry.
It was too professional. Like, I'm like, ew.
Am I supposed to be annoyed at this?
You're supposed to go like, oh, God, I hate you guys.
Brian's like, yeah, this is eating all my time away right now. I've got to.
Culling my dogs right now.
I'm nothing if not professional.
Jared, if...
Okay, sorry.
So anyways, how you doing today, Jared?
Not bad. Getting ready to take off again tomorrow, so...
Same old with you.
Yep, same old, same old.
So anyways, we are joined by Brian because we want to do a couple episodes here on player development. And this is going to be the first one of those. And because Brian is typically he's the third member of our crew, he typically is a player in the group, we figured who better to have in this conversation than him for this conversation on player communication when it comes to character development. And so this kind of fits into your Session Zero story. And so, Brian, I'm going to let you start us off here and talk about when you're kind of thinking up your character concept, and we're kind of mulling it over here at the table. What is the, you know, what are the things that you're trying to do to make sure that the character gels, and how are you trying to communicate, like, what the character is, you know, your motivation and all that sort of stuff?
Okay, so I personally, I find the character creation probably one of the roughest parts. once I get going and kind of get a feel for the character and start off, it becomes a lot easier, but character creation is always pretty rough. I say the things I'm normally trying to consider are, one, doing something I have an interest in, kind of playing a character that I want to play. But then you also have to make sure that it actually gels with the group. So for instance, if you know you're playing a game where you have a bunch of combat and nobody else has any sort of combat-oriented character, like, you probably want to give your guys some combat experience.
Maybe just a little.
One or two dots there, you know, maybe have, you know, a 12 in that stat, you know.
Or, like, if everybody is for some reason extremely antisocial and, like, can't speak to a person, like, okay, maybe give your person some, like, social skills. You don't have to be an expert in it, but at least, like, one of you should be able to handle, like, any common occurrence in the game.
So are you trying to fill in the weaknesses of the group or just the gaps that you're trying to get there?
Yeah. I mean, I think as a group collectively, I think we normally try to do that, at least to some extent. I think we all start out with our initial concept, like, this is what we want to play. And then I know, at least for me, if something else touches very close to what I was planning on doing, I'll normally try to tweak it a bit to have something unique or something that fills a gap.
I don't think we've ever had this, but have you ever... In our conversations with the other groups and we're kind of doing the Session Zero stuff, have you ever had somebody take your concept and you go like, no, I really wanted to play that? Or like, have you ever thought about vocalizing it?
That happened recently. I don't remember which game it was or which character concept it was, but I think that... I want to say somebody had a concept that was really similar to what I was thinking, or it was similar enough where I'm like, all right, let me pivot a bit and change what I was going to do. again, it's hard because I don't remember the details, but I remember doing this recently, and I think it might even be with my... Yeah, I don't remember which character, but I know I've done that before where somebody else, or I think like, oh, maybe I'll be like kind of a physical kind of brute force character, and then somebody else is already doing something like that. And so I say, okay, maybe I pivot because we don't need like two brawlers. Like,
I mean, I guess we could have two brawlers. We could just be the brute squad. I mean,
yeah. I mean, that's something that I personally look for is stuff to kind of differentiate a bit to give our group kind of a wider array of skills typically. But I don't think it's a problem necessarily if you don't do that. I mean, we've played games where we've all been playing, you know, brutes essentially.
I guess that's true. We've played games where we're all playing super physical characters. I don't think we've ever played a game where we've all played mental or social characters.
Incorrect.
Oh,
my mage, the last mage game I did, like everyone was super
well, mental. Most.
Except for my brother who played a pirate.
Well, that was your brief though. It well, except for the part about being a pirate, that wasn't part of the brief. No, it was not. The brief though was make characters that are that are smart or do research. I guess technically the Tremere game as well, yeah, that we did, yeah, was all research oriented. We all had different goals.
Yes.
I don't think we ever played two social people.
I don't think so. I don't think we've ever done a game that was like really socially based.
I think we shy away a little bit from a lot of social, particularly once it gets into like die rolling social. For our games, at least for me, it kind of becomes like somewhat, it's difficult to handle. I think if you're like, oh, I'm trying to get this information, I'm going to roll. And because I have all these advantages towards it, I win. Tell me everything.
That's a good point,
but it's not necessarily a bad thing, because think about it, that's technically physical combat, just social combat. Physical combat is I roll this dice, I have these advantages, I win.
Yeah, but Brian's made the you played the con man in the one of our games, and you had all the social advantages there. Like your con man basically could run.
He's a handsome devil.
He could basically, you know, roll with 90% success on most rolls. You know, it was pretty obscene.
I'll say part of what I tried to do to temper that a bit was he was less engaged. He wasn't actively trying to solve the problem a lot of times. So he wasn't going around interrogating and being like, oh, I'm going to break this person. Like, I'm going to get the information. He would be helping. And he was, you know, when he did socially engage people, he was helpful, but he wasn't, I think, you know, the win button.
I feel like our communication in that set of this game, that's part two of our investigation series for those of you who are keeping tabs on where we are with this, but I feel like our characters in that set of the game were actually not very well fleshed out. There was like zero communication between
us. David was totally fleshed out.
That was a character that I pivoted on, but I don't remember who I overlapped with. I didn't plan that social character.
Maybe it was Ken. I don't know. It could have been Ken.
Could have been Ken.
But oh, maybe it was. I had planned something similar to Ken with his kind of hunter character. But I don't, it wasn't a total overlap with Tano, obviously.
You didn't plan for the extremely depressed alcoholic ghosting Irishman.
Yeah, maybe not quite so violent.
I'm just going to shoot their kneecap.
But I think
I'm just going to shoot the kneecap of this law-abiding citizen.
I think, yeah, I think I planned on a hunter, and then I pivoted and did the social character instead.
I feel like our communication probably wasn't tip-top for that game. But, you know, I think that in more recent years, we've been a little bit more, I'd say, laissez-faire on our character. We just kind of we'll do what you do, and we're okay. I'm trying to think of the times that we made characters where our communication was really, really important to us. Like, you know, kind of going back and trying to hit on some of the points of, like, you know, what were the things that made them mesh? Was it the brief of tell us how your characters know each other, or, you know, was it?
I think that was. I mean, to be perfectly honest, the first detective series, when you were like, all you need is that everyone needs to either be a PI or know each other. You know, we made this group that was really, the mesh was amazing.
And you played a very disruptive character, yet you somehow fit into the group.
That was Brian.
Yes, that was Brian.
I've heard Jim brought up before.
Jim was probably my favorite character that you've ever played. I'll be honest.
He was a lot of fun to play. And I feel like one of the things I had to do, Aaron, I know I talked with you several times about it, is I'd check myself every once in a while and say, like, am I being too disruptive? Because I didn't want to get to a point where, like, the disruption of Jim was hindering everybody's enjoyment. Because I wanted it to be, oh, it's funny and disruptive, or, oh, this is making things more challenging in an entertaining way. But if it ever got to the point where you're saying, okay, like, we're just trying to solve this thing, this is getting annoying, I feel like I would have failed in that character.
And I think that's an important point for our listeners, to be perfectly honest. You know, when you're dealing with Brian really played a character that was was disruptive to our investigations a lot. You know, he'd fall asleep while we were, you know, like, investigating the lore of this ancient creature. He'd be like, I'm taking a nap. Like, we'd be examining a dead body and he'd spit dip on it. You know what I mean? Like, that was in the first investigation. He botched an investigation role and just Aaron was like, you spit dip on the body. There you go. And Brian just rolled with it. It was fantastic. But, you know, Brian's statement of because many of our listeners probably have the person who loves playing, you know, to take from the Dragonlance novels or series, the Kender-like character, the annoying halfling who has to steal everything. A lot of our, you know, people, I think, deal with the one person in their group that's like, I like to play this annoying type character. But, you know, maybe it's advice that, you know, storytellers, GMs, DMs, masters of ceremonies can give to that particular player of like, dude, you got to check yourself every once in a while just to make sure you're not just being flat out disruptive to the game and you're actually just playing the character who's mildly disruptive.
Yeah, I think you did a good job of striking that balance with Jim. I never felt like he was overly disruptive, but like, if you're going to have a character that doesn't fit and is super disruptive, that is the way that you play the character and make him fit in the game, because it added to the there's always a level of complexity in the game, one in trying as a GM to make Jim fit in any given situation, but two, you know, Jim's interactions in different situations, because Jim was crass and just like would without any filter say what was on his mind. So you would ask the person, like, did you kill him? And
like, I mean, just like right in the middle of interrogation. So like, blah, 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 do you kill him?
My favorite part was you started using that and like waiting for those openings. So like when I flat out would ask, like, did you kill him? You'd be like, I rolled, see if he's lying.
Or like you're trying to roll against like his like emotional reaction to that message, like, oh shit, am I sweating bullets now? Like, yeah. He knows, he's on to me.
I know Jim just dropped a bomb. How do I take advantage?
Yes. And it was helpful because there's times when we were just doing so much dancing around. It's like almost, you know, that super kind of cloak and dagger sort of that you're dancing around it. You're like, how do I ask this person, where were you on the night of the 26th, and say, like, do you know this other person without tipping off that I know too much about what he knows? And Jim would just come out and be like, did you kill him?
Quit pussyfooting.
Go.
Are you a werewolf? You know, just shit like that. And I loved that character.
It fit very, very well. I think you did a wonderful job there with Jim. And there's no real communication when you made Jim, except for how you knew Jared and Ken. So I guess I'll let you two kind of talk about that. Like, how did you think that this was going to fit in when you
So I don't remember very much heads up on the what Jim was going to be like. I don't recall like Brian like being like, okay, everyone, so this is my intent, and you know, this is what drives and motivates. I just remember, you know, I honestly just remember us discussing like, okay, he's going to be like a contractor that we hire, because I believe the only notification to what Jim really was he's a tracker.
Yeah,
that was like, it. Yes. Well,
okay. Yeah, we need a tracker, and you know, that'd be great, especially with the bayous and the yada yada of Alabama and Louisiana. And we're like, that's perfect character concept. And then we meet Jim for the first time, and it was great, because I think he was asleep in one of the office chairs. Just Jim just napped wherever the fuck he wanted.
That was kind of the first set in the game where we were talking about, you know, kind of sharing the player's backstory. Where, you know, you're talking about like how well you've known Jim in such a way by speaking to past experiences that Brian has never really fleshed into the character.
You know, I want to say like for a lot of that game, a lot of the what brought the characters together was those small, maybe 5 minute scenes tops. Of our characters being at the office and our players literally just improvising with each other on certain stuff. You know, like for example, we all made the continued joke that my character was a little forgetful about things, specifically the coffee pot, leaving the coffee pot on, which, you know, started from the first game. It was like literally like Ken looked at like me and he was like, Ellis, you left the coffee pot on again. And Ellis like, no, I didn't, blah, 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 blah. And,
I always unplug it. Make sure to unplug it.
Make sure to unplug it. And, you know, and like Aaron, I'd go back in here and be like, the coffee pot is like, you know, definitely burned from being on less. And I was like, shit. You know, and it takes the acceptance of that improv moment, because, and what it did was in the end, Aaron ended that first section of the game with our office eventually got burned down. And the cops come out with the coffee maker. They're like, somebody left the coffee pot on. And like, it brought it full circle from the beginning of the game. Just one of the stupid things. And, you know, so it really was a lot of improvising and us accepting, I guess, some of the basic rules of improv is being respectful to each other, like not doing something that's humiliating for another person, and us knowing each other as people, like what would upset one another. Now I say where we broke that rule one time, because you know, Ken was not very good at, or had certain boundaries with very strong boundaries about like improvising with his character, that it couldn't be anything, you know, a little I wouldn't even call it demeaning, because I remember an improv in one game where we made up this idea that his character liked to collect state spoons.
And, yes.
And, like, he hated that. Like, dude, it's a little funny. Like, it's just a state spoon collection. There's nothing embarrassing about it. Like, but he did not like
that. He didn't like the state spoon collection, no.
He did not like that at all. And then, you know, I was a dick and...
Again,
poked him even more with it.
Yeah. We found a sore spot. We poked him.
I don't get the sore spot. Somebody's character in a collection of state spoons.
It's always one of those weird things, like, you know, finding that way to, again, and this is probably where in character creation we probably could have found some lines. We probably could have drawn some boundaries to kind of go forward.
It's important. Go ahead. You first.
Thank you. I think that it's difficult because we were doing collaborative storytelling, and I think that for most of us, we were on board to kind of welcome that collaboration into our backstories as well. And I think that Ken came in with kind of a firmer idea of what he wanted his backstory to be and what he wanted
Very true.
Story to to be on the character. Whereas the rest of us were much more open to letting other people kind of fill in some of those details to add that interaction and to add that history.
And it's worked so well. I mean, like, honestly, with, you know, moving on from the Detective Series 1, we didn't really do that for the Detective Series 2.
No. What I would say, though, as a point to listeners, if you're looking for a tool for the toolbox and kind of improving that character creation and how you kind of drive that communication, if you're going to let your players sort of improv out your backgrounds, let them do that. But if some players like guys, this is a line you can't cross, you know, really, you got to hash that out there in the session zero, or be open about that as, you know, we go forward and say, like, this is my character's background. I've kind of thought about it. Make sure that the players are aware of it. Give the players the Cliff's Notes. We've already talked about backgrounds and how much we don't like them or listen to them.
Or read them.
But if you're the type of group that likes to put character backgrounds together, make sure that the rest of the players can see the character background in, you know, a short brief, so they're not pushing against something. That, you know,
it, yeah, exactly. I mean, like, and, you know, for the improv thing is you got to know, you know, it's KYP, but it's also, you know, for the other players to know, you know, like, I didn't know that Ken would have such a strong dislike of State Spoon Collections, but I mean, like, who'd ever figure that one out? But I'm just saying, like, State Spoons are kind of cool. Go ahead.
No, you go this time.
Fine, jerk. But you know, it, to be perfectly honest, you know, it does take a little bit of feeling out, and, you know, just kind of, it does require open communication, because I think if Ken had verbally just told me, like, Jared, I don't like your addition there, we're not going to bring it up anymore.
You could have just dropped it. We could have stopped it, and, you know.
But had he, you know, he just kept being like, Spoons. Upset.
he just didn't like him. And again, you're right. I think he did have a much firmer idea of what his character backstory and history was for the character. I think we learned that when we did his game, where he you know, Sebi ended up in the hospital and we were investigating stuff on Sebi, and I was like, okay, he has a very particular view of how his character is and how his character is lined. Laid out here.
It's great because with Brian's character, we could come up with whatever shit that we wanted.
I think Brian
just rolled with the fact that we made him like an isolationist with landmines around his house.
I think you guys like improved the landmines, and I just went with it. Like, that fits. You know?
That fits. No, that's good.
Or there are bear traps. Like,
like, you have to walk a distinct line to get to Jim's house. You have to walk a very distinct path.
I mean, as a player myself, I've always sort of gone the route of loosely think about the character background and, you know, heavily focus on how the character acts and is going to play and fill in the details about the background later. Like, because once you start in the flow of play, it's mostly about how your character acts more so than it is about where they came from. Yeah. So, like, I think that the we, Brian, as players, have kind of always been the, you know, in most of Jared's games have been, you know, I don't want to speak for you exactly here, but we've always kind of played the same type of character in that regard, which is the background is secondary to the character that was made. There might be some interesting tidbits about it, like, yep. We go into Elders and we talk about your character, which had the Grand Clave that was passed down by his, you know, his forefathers. Well, beyond that, your character didn't have a lot of depth and background, to my remembrance, at least.
No.
And you know, my character had virtually zero background besides the fact that I was coming to Chicago to visit family. So, like, I knew that I had family there, and that's sort of how our characters and I, you know, crossed paths and you know, we're and destinedly came together, and we forged a bond to go forward. But Jared put together the actual background for our characters much, much later in the game. We gave him a blank canvas to fill in. Where did that Grand Clave come from? Were we, you know, he made us connected in the past by our families being connected. Mm-hmm. And, like, I kind of gave you carte blanche to do whatever you mm-hmm. wanted with that, and I didn't care about that. So I mean, I guess in that regard, it was just kind of like, let's just not make the exact same carbon copy characters in character development.
Yeah. No, I think that we've done a little bit more recently in like developing a little more thorough background. Cause I think elders, we didn't have a whole lot. It's like, okay, what's our immediate motivation? Now let's go. I think it, to some respect, it's easier to do that in that type of game. We were playing Werewolf at the time. And so with that, there's always kind of that overarching, okay, you know, you're fighting evil, you know, you're fighting the worm, you know, you're a werewolf. You're some version of eco-terrorists.
That's what they are.
And so I think that like, it's easy to gloss over some of that stuff, especially if it's not something you care about a lot at the time. It's easy to kind of just jump right in because you have some of that stuff built up. But particularly for a more recent game, since we're playing humans, I think it becomes a lot more present that you're making a person. And so you have, I think, at least for me, it seems like the history becomes more important. The profession becomes more important. Whereas like in Werewolf, you're kind of defined, or it seems like at least within the game, you're defined by that role as a werewolf.
As an eco-terrorist.
Yeah, like I'm part of this pack.
It is. And it like, God, that's why I love playing humans so fucking much. Like, honestly, right now I'm playing the character that I love. This is the character that I've loved playing the most. And I did actually, there's a lot of background for Rachel.
You actually put together more background on Rachel. You kind of, you did some randomness in there too.
I did a ton of random generators. You know, like for family, you know, like I did a generator for what because, you know, one of the things that I love about random generators, especially name generators, or sorry, it's not one of the things I love, that's sarcastic. One of the difficult things to get around, especially when it's America, is we have a lot of people of a lot of different origins. And if you put in random American name generator, it gives you pretty much two last name options. One, English last name. Two, Hispanic. We have countries, people from all countries and all origins, and like I put in random European country generator, and actually her last name is Belarusian. Mm-hmm. Like it's would be specifically like from somebody who's got lineage back in Belarus, and like, for her, like, I put together, I just went through random generators and was like, oh, that sounds fun. Oh, that sounds fun. What occupation did stepdad have? Oh, he's a minister. Okay. This story got more exciting.
Are there any things that we tend to avoid, tend to try to, you know, in the character creation process when we're kind of talking with one another that we try to avoid? I mean, I know that we're not trying to create, like, super powerhouse characters or anybody who's going to touch nerves on anyone else, but I'm trying to think of, you know, are there any things that we've been like, hey, don't do that thing, like, you know, like that's, you know, or is that typically handled by the brief from the GM?
It's typically handled by the brief from the GM.
Yeah. You touched on the only other one I think of is like, I typically try to make sure that my character is overpowered in most respects. Because, like, you don't want to make it you don't want to make it difficult to go into, like, a combat, because anything that can touch me will absolutely obliterate the rest of the team. Like,
that's true. Funny, we've sort of...
I think Aaron has to deal with that situation.
I do.
It's okay to some extent. I mean, and you have a lot going on with your current character that works with it. Like, I think that even though, like, your character is very strong.
No, I'm talking about his other game group. He has, like, there's one guy with, like, a agility or a defense level.
Oh, that's a whole different power level structure thing. Your character, technically, my character, in this one is...
See, here's the thing with White Wolf.
Throw a gun at somebody.
here's the thing in White Wolf. Like, I, no matter how many dice you have, there's still always the huge freaking option for getting like one success on something.
You're just more likely to be successful. There's a lot of I've owned their asses with three dice and, like, roll characters.
My character is mega powered. I mean, like, Jared filled in a lot of fucking dots, and I was like, this character, and but it went with the character.
This would be equivalent to having like an 18 or a 20 on a stat in D&D.
Yeah.
But, like, except for the fact that there's a lot of more randomness in terms of when you try to strike someone, that 18 is only, it just means that you get to roll, like, if somebody gets to roll like three dice, somebody else gets to roll four. Like, it's
like this way, you know, I think for many D&D players, they can understand. It's like, I hit this guy squaw with my freaking axe, right? I rolled at 18 plus my strike level of 7, and I got way over his defense level. And so I hit him real good with that axe. And then you roll your axe damage, and you get 1, 1, 1. And my strength modifiers is 3, but I still only did, like, 4 health points of damage. I think every D&D player, that is like hitting with White Wolf, or any skill in White Wolf, is you have to deal, or the D10 system, you have to deal with the, I have a huge dice pool, and I roll, you know, garbage. Even though, like, my last strike, like, I hit that guy so good, and then I did 1 damage with my Beretta. It doesn't make a whole lot of sense, because, like, I shoot someone in the chest, the likelihood of them not getting any damage is very low.
Right. Yeah, very low. We change the description oftentimes, or at least I have done this as a GM, where it's like, oh, you know, you're on target. You know, you hit squaw and it was to the chest, but then you're like, oh, it's a glancing shot, like over the shoulder or something. So it actually makes sense within the story.
There's one thing that I freaking hate about firearms damage in that game.
Yeah, well, you know, there are problems with all game systems that sometimes can't be mitigated.
But so, I can say personally, I used to make characters. There was a period of time where, like, I always took there was a merit charmed existence, which yes, let me ignore one botch every time, and, like, I'd take a lot of dice, and so it stacks the odds so heavily in your favor that I think it can take away some of the danger and excitement of the game.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
And so I've tried to tone that down since then, so that it's not quite so one-sided.
Yeah. It's man. Yeah.
Again, so what I'm bringing us back around to the topic. And, hey,
yeah, sorry.
As we sort of devolved into a dice conversation there. I mean, the interesting thing, though, is that I think what we should take away from this is that it's kind of a twofold thing here, is that, you know, most of this conversation about how you're going to either complement your other players or, you know, not completely create the exact same character, you know, happens in character creation. I know from our recent times, we've actually been talking about our stats openly and who our characters are, and it helps kind of give an idea of, like, just from hearing your stats, I can kind of get an idea of who your character is, and I can kind of see how that might, you know, overlay into the other character. It's sort of like, is this okay by committee? Sort of.
It is. We have really started doing that a lot.
Like, hey, if I take 4 dots in this thing, are we okay with that? Like,
and especially with character development. You know, like, expending experience, we do by committee a lot nowadays.
Yeah. Did I earn this? Can I buy this 1 point of linguistics? Or you're like, nobody. I've never heard somebody go, like, I don't know about that, Aaron. And like, yeah, that's not jiving with me. I don't think you've learned that skill.
Yeah, nobody's. I don't think we've had any dissenting votes, but.
Well, next time I'm going to start dissenting. I'm going to be like, Jared, no.
I think it's something we're all thinking about, though, which is probably part of why nobody's dissenting. Because you're cognizant of, oh, I'm going to see if it's okay with everybody, you're already running it through that filter for yourself. You're not like, oh, my character who's been, you know, doing nothing for the past 3 games wants to suddenly have 5 strength. Like,
I do remember that a topic that I wanted to talk about because, you know, but we'll continue with this one, but I remember it. So,
okay.
I'm not going to number it because then I'll forget it because I remember every time that I'm like, I've got 3 points. I remember two.
It's horrible. It's two and he forgets about it. Does it fit into this topic?
It does. It does. It was actually one of the reasons that I think we came up with this topic.
Oh, go ahead, please.
So one of the things that I started doing is I've begun to evolve and play more. And because I'll be honest, you know, for our listeners, these two guys have had to put up with an awful player. It's not like I was trying to be awful. I was just untrained on how to be a player.
We've got another topic on that called level up your playing.
Yeah, we'll talk about that.
Yeah.
But this one was, so one of the things that I started doing with character development was I was informing other players, specifically Brian, because Aaron was storytelling at the time, of topics I was going to explore with my character. So in one game, specifically what I told, so my character has an addiction to steroids at the moment. So I was going to explore her anger, her roid rage. And and I wanted to get Brian's thoughts on the air of, you know, because I started informing you, like, So for Aaron's second game, he did a game centered around an auction, right? So I said I wanted to explore Rachel's love life, and Rachel just focused on love, right? So every action I took had like some sort of sexual connotation or dating connotation. The entire time I bugged Brian about how his character isn't married and how he's a good guy and I can hook him up with one of my friends and blah blah blah. So there was that, but I didn't inform Brian that I was doing. So the next game, when I was like, I want to explore Rachel's roid rage and her anger, I let Brian know about it ahead of time so he could think about how he was going to react. And I want Brian's, what did you think about that? How did you think of that for an experiment?
So I could kind of see it going either way. I will say I liked it for that because particularly when you're doing something like rage and anger, I think on occasion it can be difficult when a player is expressing that level of like anger to know if you've crossed some sort of line with the player. And so it was helpful to know in advance that you're like, I'm going to get pissed off in this game. So I know that when you're getting pissed off, it's not you who's pissed off. Not that I think that's something that you are normally experiencing. Yeah. It's not necessarily a problem that I think you have in particular, but it is something I've encountered before where something happens with a player and you're like, I don't know if the player's upset or the character's upset.
Yeah, we've all experienced that.
Yeah, multiple times, yes. I'm sure everybody who's ever been at a table has experienced that where you're like, did I just cross the line with Tom?
Or Tom's character.
Or Tom's character. I'm not sure. Is that Stephanie really mad at me? Or because I made that joke? Or is that just Stephanie's character mad at me because I made that joke?
And so I think it helped in that respect to know in advance, like, you're planning on having some angry moments, like that it's not you who's angry, that it's your character is going to be getting angry and you're going to be getting set off. I remember, and it did give me time to try to like think about possible reactions. I did really enjoy in that game when you just like went off on somebody's mailbox.
Like, I hate like, this wow. fucking town. Just completely beat the shit out of their mailbox.
That mailbox will never be the same again.
No, no.
They're like, what the hell happened?
Holy fuck.
Oh, man.
But yeah, no, I thought it was a good experiment, and I think, you know, for character or for player development, I think it's a really good thing to explore, you know, and especially welcoming other players into exploring it with you because... Mm-hmm. You know, for example, it welcomes me to think about, like, let's say, so Brian's character is playing a widower. A widower. If Brian told me that he wanted to explore sorrow for for Aaron's game. Now, mind you, this works better with episodic. It could work for Chronicle-based games because, you know, for the next three sessions, that's what I'm going to do. Or for the next two sessions, I'm going to explore this. It allows me time to think, like, okay, how does my character react to this? Okay, what should I be adding in some of my improv stuff? Should I not? You know, because when the person says I want to explore, you know, in that time they can say, you know, I welcome you to add to it. You know, be like, yeah, I remember the time I met your wife. You know, Brian can tell me ahead of time, like, your character never, like, no one's ever met her. She died before he joined the investigators.
That's a good point. It keeps you from stepping over, again, boundaries. You're kind of outlining it there with the character itself.
So, yeah, that was. I thought it was a cool player communication working towards development factoid.
Very cool.
Factoid.
Well, anyways, do either one of you have anything else you want to add to this subject?
No, that was it for me.
I'm going to round back to something just because I was thinking it at the time, and I think we sidetracked for a minute. So I just wanted to say, in terms of the kind of fleshing in-game, working out, like, backgrounds collaboratively, one of my favorite things, I think it works out really well when you're all on board, one of my favorite things is just this little silly thing where you're like, oh, Chris always drives.
Oh, God, I love that.
And so now in the game, my character is always driving. I had no plans to do that.
See, and Aaron and I forgot to ask about who drives when says you're storytelling now, and Aaron and I are like both like lost, like, who drives when Chris isn't driving?
The funny thing is my character has the flaw of Sunday driver. So I assume that like we would get to the car and be like, wait a minute, who's supposed to drive? And then Rachel would go, you're it.
See, Rachel likes to lounge while driving. She's
used it's these little things that just add additional life to the characters. And that was a good example that I wanted to bring up, but I think we got sidetracked and we moved on to other topics.
No, that's a great point. Yeah, no. Again, that's something that you can take as a tool, you know, to kind of make that your own if you're listening to this podcast, you know, to bring that into your players, let them know, like, hey, feel free to improv in your backstories.
And it's kind of funny. See, I said I had nothing left, and now
Brian eked it out. Just squeeze the towel. Just one more.
Sometimes it's fun when you don't inform or you don't communicate with other players. Because Brian and I have been trying to figure out the mystery. So Aaron's character is currently. He said there is no flaw for it, but I want to give him a 3-point flaw that's called impressionable, because. Brian and I have been trying to figure out for like 5 sessions now, because in one of my previous games, Brian and Aaron's character had visited a dwarf community, and there was a church to the Allfather or whatever deity, I forget which deity, Morden, there, and he was given like a holy book, and there were some of the followers of Morden, and like his character has been like... making Morden statements in the middle of the game. So, like, Brian and I are still, like, trying to figure out, and neither of us have asked Aaron directly, but, like, so finally in this game, I'm like, so this whole Morden thing, is this a real thing, or are you fucking with us? Because we're not sure if his character is really following a dwarven god, being a mortal human from the 21st century.
It's been fun in Brian's current game because I've been able to... That's really where I got the idea of the impressionable thing, which is like Brian's like, well, you run a tight ship, and I'm like, well, if I run a tight ship, I gotta keep doing it. And I'm like, I do run a tight ship. Like, I'm really buying into the role, even though I shouldn't be buying it.
So our characters are currently stuck in some sort of, we believe it to be somebody's fantasy, where everyone gets assigned roles like they're actors and stuff like that, and Aaron's taking his barkeep role a little fucking hard.
Yeah, it's fun. It's a nice little kind of push into the character. It's a little disruptive, but it's not super disruptive.
It's not. It's hilarious.
But anyways, Any other points?
No, I promise. That's
one more time? Sure. You want to bring one more up? Okay. Well, anyways, we appreciate you listening to the episode. If you have thoughts on character development and kind of, you know, your players' communication within that, go ahead and contact us at levelupyourgamingpodcast@gmail.com or facebook.com/levelupyourgaming. You can also review us on your favorite podcast site, share this with a friend. We are on YouTube as well. So, Brian, you don't know what to do. Jared.
Talk with you that like button first, have a good conversation, and then click it.
Thank you. I appreciate it. And, you know, keep listening to the episodes. I know we appreciate Brian. Thank you for joining us for this episode here. We do appreciate it for our kind of our player.
Again, super fucking perfect. Thank you for coming, Brian. Oh, God, I'm going to walk away now.
As I said, I'm nothing if not professional. Jesus
Christ, I'm walking away. That's right. We're a couple of professionals here.
I'm not professional.
We're tolerating your behavior because we're professional.
Well, we do appreciate you joining us, Brian, for this kind of look into the player side of things. And we'll talk to you all next week. So for Brian and Jared, I'm Aaron. Have a great week, everyone.
Have a great week, everyone.
Have a great week.